Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Gaylord, Michigan, and earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in elementary education from Saginaw Valley State University. After playing professional basketball in Europe for 2 years, he became a school teacher and then a school counselor. He's the Emmy Award-winning TV host of From Glory Days, which inspires others through the stories of former athletes that now live a life of significance. His name, Kurt David, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to a most extraordinary man, Kurt David. Kurt, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Oh, Jack, it's my honor. Looking at the list of people that you've interviewed over the last 13 years, I feel very honored.
Thank you. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Yeah, I think this is where it all started. This is the foundation of my life. I grew up with six siblings, three boys and three girls. All six of us were on full-ride athletic scholarship, and two of us played professionally. So imagine that household growing up. But early on, we grew up with eight of us in one house and one bathroom. So you learn early on that it's not all about you. And that was a foundation for me to realize that, okay, there's others in this world, not just me.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
That's a great question. You know, both were in the giving areas. My dad was the director of social services for the county where we grew up, and my mother was a teacher for over 35 years. And so both of them are in an industry. We're in an industry where they gave back and helped others. And so I think early on, realizing that helping others is a very important part of who I should be.
You had a speech impediment while in grade school.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, I had a speech teacher, probably about third or fourth grade, was learning my R's. The red rooster ran down the road. I think I heard that until I was in nauseam. But yeah, early on, I had a problem with speaking, and as a result, I had some speech pathology help. And then as time went on, started doing more articulation drills to help. And don't want to move ahead of us, but when we got to the point where I'm on TV, it's like, boy, I better start speaking clearer.
You know, you have a face for TV, David. You know that, huh?
Thank you.
How good of an athlete in high school and college were you growing up?
You know, there's always better athletes. I mean, that's the thing in this world is that there's always great athletes, but there's always somebody better. And I think, you know, for me, I was very tall early on. And so in eighth grade, I was 6'5", which started my foundation as far as basketball. It hurt a lot. My pain physically was a lot because of the fact that my bones were growing so much faster than a soft tissue around it. So I wasn't paying a lot at that age. But early on, you know, dunking in eighth grade and moving on to be 6'8 in high school and then grew another inch in college. Certainly that helped and had some abilities as far as skills and jumping. But, you know, that said, I think that in high school we had the fortune of getting to the semifinals in high school, made some All-State honors a couple years and had a full-ride scholarship to go to college. College was a roller coaster ride. I think that was probably the opening of my eyes, realizing that, oh boy, you know, I'm good, but there's a lot of good players out there. And so came in as a freshman starting, which was really great, but I don't know if I was ready for it emotionally. Roller coaster ride after that, we won a couple championships in there as far as conference championships, and I was a part of those teams, and so it was nice, and national tournament berths. But then had an opportunity after I was done playing in college, and actually I feel like I got better after college playing overseas in Germany. And when that opportunity came, I jumped on it and literally had a time of my life. I mean, just getting paid to do something I love. The only challenge was I lived in a country whose language I didn't speak, and so moving to Germany and knowing only a couple words, Dummkopf and Schweinhund were the only two words that I knew at that time, which wouldn't get me very far. But and so it was a great experience, and more than just the basketball itself. It was traveling, it was meeting other people, meeting other athletes from all over the world, as well as the, you know, a couple of Americans that were over there at that time. And so it was really, you know, I feel very blessed. It was an opportunity that many people don't have, and I was very grateful for the opportunity that I did have to do that.
What's the biggest thing, Kurt, that two-year chapter taught you?
I think the biggest thing was that basketball wasn't the most important thing in my life. At that time, I was realizing that basketball was great. It paid my ticket. But especially as I incurred a knee injury that I didn't think was as serious as I thought it was at that time. I hyperextended my knee, which tore a couple of the ligaments, but eventually went in for surgery and realized that it was time to get a real job. Basically, the orthopedic had said, you can keep playing and not walk by the time you're 40, or you can give it up. And as a 26-year-old, you know, 25, 26-year-old young man, that's a, you know, a tough choice where you lose your identity, you lose your job, basically. But for me, I think what it taught me was that basketball wasn't everything. That was just kind of a cool job, so to speak. And so for me, it was nice to have the opportunity, but also realizing that there's much more to life. And fortunately, Jack, the best fortune that I had was that I had finished my degree before I played professionally. And so I had that degree in my back pocket as a result.
You go from playing professional ball in Germany, and then you come back home to Gaylord, Michigan in 1989, and you become an elementary school teacher. What did they pay you to do that?
Well, it was a substantial pay cut, let me put it that, especially in a private school. I came back to my alma mater, which was Gaylord St. Mary, and I think my first year pay was around $14,000. And I did coach. I was a varsity basketball coach at that time, which I think paid about another $1,800. So I was really rolling in it at that time. But to be honest, you know, the money wasn't the issue. It was more of doing something that I was passionate about, something that I loved. And having that elementary education degree, wanting to coach, it was a learning experience for me. I mean, being a player is one thing, but coaching others is another thing. And so I learned as much as I think as the kids that I coached.
We're talking to Kurt David. When we come back, we're going to ask him about that personal transition from being a pro basketball player to an elementary school teacher in Gaylord, Michigan. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Kurt David, who for 2 years played pro ball, basketball in Germany, and then you come back to Gaylord, Michigan, your elementary school, and you become a coach and a teacher. What was that transition like, Kurt?
Yeah, it was difficult. And one thing we didn't mention in there that I didn't mention was that I took a year off in between there. I when I came back, I was kind of, I don't want to say lost, but certainly it was a rude awakening for me of the fact that, oh boy, I lost my job, I lost my income, somewhat of my identity. And partway through that year, I decided to go to grad school and start my master's in counseling. And so I took that year, did that, and then came back and taught and coached. And so that year gave me some time to refocus, so to speak. But yeah, it was challenging, I think, as in most pro athletes. And this is one of the reasons and the premise of my idea of the book and the show of interviewing former athletes is how did they find success again? What did they do to recreate that passion and purpose? Those are the things that really interest me personally at that time. So I went through it myself as far as finding that passion and purpose again. And to be honest, it took me about 5 years, Jack. I mean, it just took me 5 years to realize that I wasn't in competition with everybody around me. As an athlete, you're in constant competition, either with the opponents or your own teammates for playing time. And so it was an atmosphere that back in the real world, so to speak, was not there. In other words, we compete back in the real world, but it wasn't on the same level that I was as an athlete. So it took me about 5 years to relax and realize, boy, I'm not in competition with everybody around me.
We're talking to Kurt David. If you want to learn more, www.kurtwithak.david.com. So you taught school from 89 to 95, and then in 95 you become a school counselor for the next 21 years.
Yes.
Through 2016. How was it you became a counselor?
Yeah, I think, you know, the teaching was great, but for me, realizing that there's another way to help people, and that was the counseling. Watching my mother as a teacher, watching my father as a director of social services, giving back was important. I think for me, getting that counseling degree was just, one, another step of accomplishment for me. I believe in setting new goals once you accomplish other goals. And so for me, getting a master's degree was one of my goals. And as a result, getting that counseling degree was important to start doing what I wanted to do, which is help students at that time in the counseling world, running groups, support with their academics, supporting parents. And, you know, a lot of the parallels from sports apply to that. In other words, you learn how to work as a team. You learn to help others on your team. And so it's kind of the same philosophy. And so basically what I was doing is, rather than competing on the basketball court, I was competing for students to help them become the best that they could become. And to me, that became my new passion and purpose.
In 2009, while you're still doing the counseling, somehow you create a TV show entitled From Glory Days. Kurt David, how does one go about creating a TV show?
Yeah, I think I'm still asking myself that, Jack, but I had no experience whatsoever other than, you know, being interviewed a few times on TV. I had no experience about the industry itself, how to create a program show or a TV show, how to develop it, how to air it, right? And those are things that I had to learn. It all developed from the concept of two things. One is my own transition. Two is being interested in the transition of other former professional athletes. Now, one of the things I have to qualify, Jack, is that my career is pale in comparison to the people that I sit down with today. I mean, I sit down with Hall of Fame, All-Star, World Champion, former professional athletes. And so, in comparison, my career wasn't even close to what these folks, men and women, that I interview have gone through. But that said, it all boiled down to the fact that I really was interested to hear how other former athletes found success. That was my motivation. In fact, my motivation was that if one person heard or read the book that I created as a result on the same name, one athlete read or heard this and it helped them with their transition, that was my motivation. It wasn't to create this great best-selling book or this TV show. It was to help other athletes. And so that was my motivation, and it's turned into much more than that, much, much more.
We're talking to Kurt David. If you want to learn more, www.fromglorydays.com. Kurt, if you would paint a picture for us of the day when a Hall of Fame athlete gets cut and or retires.
Yeah, boy, it's the exit stats for professional athletes is very sobering. 100% of professional athletes ultimately lose their job. Right? Undeniable fact, 100% at some point are done, whether it's by choice, by cut, whatever it is. 25% of NFL players within the first year are bankrupt. 78% of NFL players within 2 years are broke. 60% of NBA players within 5 years experience financial disaster. And there's up to an 80% divorce rate. So from job loss to disaster, that's the reality that Hall of Fame, All-Star, World Champion athletes have to face. And so the first step is understanding, you know, one of the most difficult parts of being an athlete is letting go. There's no question about it, because it's ingrained in our marrow never to let go, not to give up, keep trying, you know, knock down seven, get up eight, right? But all of a sudden, the career is over for whatever the reason, whether it be an injury or just not good enough anymore, team cuts you, you don't get picked up. Most athletes don't walk away on their own terms. In other words, every once in a while, you have an athlete that walk away on their own terms. That's very rare. Most don't. And so part of it is, how do you prepare for something that you're not planning on, right? That's the first thing. In other words, boy, I'm not planning on this career to be over, and it's over. How do I plan, or what do I do next, right? And I can't tell you, Jack, how many athletes I talk to of all different levels, whether they're Hall of Fame or not, that just simply their answer is, when it comes to what am I going to do next, I don't know. Right? That's the honest answer. And I understand that. I went through that myself. But I think one of the first things is redeveloping a focus, a new focus. In other words, redeveloping what their current goals are, what their new goals are. But that said, I think that, you know, if you look at a Hall of Fame athlete, one of the first things is it by their choice or not? Right? Because if it's by their choice, typically there is a little bit of planning that goes ahead. If not, let's say it's a Hall of Fame athlete that had an injury or something he didn't plan on. And then it's just a matter of saying, boy, you know, do I try to come back from this injury, or do I try to get better so I can be picked up even though, you know, everybody's cut me? I've seen great athletes that linger on far too long when they should have probably given it up. Right? Because they think, oh, okay, I can stay with this. I can play another 2 years. I can play another 3 years, whatever it is. I've seen that. I've also seen Hall of Fame type athletes that really, you know, they're injured. They give it another year or two, try to recover. Their body never gets back to full 100% of where they were before. And so part of this is understanding this. They don't have an income during this time. right? You don't play, you don't get paid unless you have some type of guaranteed contract, which, you know, typically at that stage is unusual. And so they might have maybe 6 months, maybe a year, if they're lucky with a contract that is still paying them when they're not playing. Most of them not. So if they're done playing, they're done getting paid. And so the reality of the fact of the income aspect of it is challenging too. If I have time, I can tell you a great story. There's a gentleman as a pitcher. He actually pitched for the Tigers. He was on the team during 1984, but he was not picked up in time to play in a World Series, but he was on the team. And so this guy by the name of Roger Mason also went on to pitch for the Philadelphia Phillies 4 out of 6 World Series games. So in other words, he's pitching out of the 6 World Series games 4 times. Imagine that. I mean, that's like the pinnacle of a pitcher's career. Well, 2 years later, Roger was working in a rural factory in northern Michigan just to make ends meet. And here's why. Here's the path of somebody of that caliber. He went from pitching in a World Series, 4 out of 6 games. The following year, he got injured while working out. And unfortunately, that was the year there was a baseball strike, so he was not under contract, had no income, went to try to recover. You know, the team was even trying to help him out, even saying, hey, I know you're not under contract, but let's go to our trainers, let's go to our physical therapist. For 2 years, he tried to come back from his injury and was unable to. Did not have a single penny of income during that time. After 2 years of that, he realized, wow, I've not provided for my family. I need to do something just to get an income. So he moved back up north where he was from, up in northern Michigan, got a job at a rural factory just to make ends meet. So literally he went from pitching 4 out of 6 games in a World Series to 2 years later working at a factory just to make ends meet.
We're talking to Kurt David, and to repeat some of those stats, 25% of NFL players are broke within the first year after retirement, 78% after 2 years. 60% of NBA players are bankrupt within 5 years. The divorce rate amongst pro athletes hovers around 80%. And I'm Jack Krasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasul, and we're with Kurt David, the Emmy Award-winning TV producer, host from Glory Days. Also, share with us all the perks, all the services that these guys have at their beck and call that when they get cut, go away overnight.
Probably one of the best quotes I've heard came from 5-time NHL All-Star Johnny Ogronek. Johnny O, who played for the Red Wings, played also in the Rangers and a couple different teams. But Johnny put it best when he said, why is it that when I'm getting paid all this money, everybody wants to give me free stuff, but when I'm not getting paid all this money, I have to pay for everything? It's kind of ironic, right? And literally, but that's what happens. I mean, free cars, hey, come wear this suit, you know, and represent us. Come on into our restaurant, have a meal. And so it is ironic in society that that happens like that, Jack, that when somebody's making that kind of money, all of a sudden when they're not is when they have to pay for things. And so, you know, I don't know if that's society. I don't know if that's just the way pro sports are. I guess I don't quite understand or never really question why that is. But the reality is that it is that way. That's the way it is. And so I guess for pro athletes, one of the things, you know, one of the best things that pro athletes can do is understand that at some point this is going to be over. Right, this bubble that I'm living in, this 3.2 years or whatever the average is now, is not going to last forever. And so whatever I have at this time, it's something that's very temporary. I have a very small window of opportunity to make this kind of income. Now, granted, too, I've done 50 TV interviews, 20 people for the book, but not everybody's from this multi-million-dollar contract era, right? I mean, there's athletes from the past that were not making. They had to work in the off-season as well. And so those athletes had a different type of lifestyle than the athletes do today. Today, the athletes typically, I think the average for Major League Baseball contract is $3.2 million right now. That's the average Major League Baseball contract. And so it's a different era now. But that said, I guess part of it is planning, understanding that, okay, if I am a current athlete, I'm making this kind of money right now, it's a very short amount of time, right? You hear about the multi-million dollar, $100, $200 million contracts. You also hear about these athletes lasting 14, 15 years. Those are the anomaly. though that is not something that happens very commonly. Most athletes are done. They make the average income. You think about it, not everybody's a Michael Jordan. Not everybody's a LeBron James. Not, you know, we can go through the whole list of people that are not in that caliber. And so most athletes have the everyday life. I'll give you a great example. I had a chance of sitting down with a former professional soccer player. Right, this guy played 10 years of professional soccer. And unfortunately, in soccer, it's not quite the same pay grade as other of the mainstream sports. So he came out after 10 years of professional sports and had a hard time finding a job because everybody was saying, hey, you got your degree, but you don't have all this experience, right? We're hiring people of your age with 10 years worth of experience. He's like, no, I've been playing pro sports. And so that was kind of a detriment against him, actually, when he went to look for a real job, plus the fact that he didn't have that kind of an income while playing pro sports. In fact, most people don't know this, but if you average all of the pro professional sports, average all of these salaries in professional sports, it's under $20,000 a year. If you take the average all professional sports, not just the main ones, right? You talk about the main, you know, it's a whole different salary. But if you talk about professional bowling, you talk about professional, you know, whatever it is, croquet or whatever other professional sports there are. If you were to take that average, that's very interesting. That's less than $20,000.
The name of the show is Anything Is Possible. That being said, Mike Tyson earned over $300 million in his career. And he burnt through all of it. That's impossible.
Well, clearly it's not impossible because it happened. But, you know, that's more than some country's gross domestic product, right? I mean, you look at $300 million in his career. And, you know, there's two things I believe, in my opinion, from what I've researched and looked at with Michael Tyson's situation, is one is he had people that he trusted, that he had helped manage situations, whether it be businesses or his money, that were robbing him blind. The second thing is were his choices, right? The second part of it was he was making choices that, you know, does he really need white tigers or this kind of a lifestyle? You know, the problem is advice is only as good as it is heeded. Even if he found somebody of great advice, you know, a financial planner, it's only as good as it is heeded. And I find that often that pro athletes, when they sign a contract, especially now in Major League Baseball, they have to have a financial advisor with them when they sign that contract. But the problem is, you know, hey, the advisor can advise, but if the athlete still says, no, I want to buy that watch, I want to buy that car, I want to buy these houses, you know, it's still their money, so to speak. And so, you know, with Michael Tyson, certainly that's the epitome of somebody as an athlete losing money. I don't know anybody else that's lost that kind of money as an athlete. Certainly there's businesses that have lost that kind of money. But as an athlete, a high-profile athlete, and the problem is with a pro athlete, everything you do is like in a fishbowl, right? People are going to see it. People are going to hear about it. Now, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that wasn't the case. You know, now it's different. If an athlete does something, you're going to know about it almost instantly. And so if somebody makes poor choices with money or makes a bad decision in their family, you're going to hear about it right away.
We're talking to Kurt David, and I quote him now, "I inspire others through the stories of former athletes that now live a life of significance." So going to those that have successfully transitioned, what do they have in common, Kurt?
Oh, that's a great question, Jack. One of the things for the TV show, we're going on season 5 now, so this has been quite a run. It's really, I'm very grateful for the athletes that I've been able to sit down with. I'm very grateful for the stories. There's two things that we target for athletes to have on the show. One is that they have a Hall of Fame, All-Star, champion-type status. The second is, not that they haven't gone through this horrific transition that they all go through, but is that they found success again. They found a way to find success again. And so for us, finding those athletes and looking at who's found success, and to be honest, Jack, I found a commonality of success. What I found is that there was these athletes that did find success had 5 things that they found in common. And as a result, I looked at those, I studied those, and I found out, boy, okay, it's not just the athletes, but other people that go through transition. It's not just for athletes, but anybody facing a transition. When they do these 5 things, they can find success again. So if I can, I wouldn't mind getting into those then. It's an acronym that I created. It's called RULES, R-U-L-E-S. Each letter stands for something. Each letter means something. What I found is the athletes, as well as organizations or individuals that go through a transition, when they apply these 5 things, they have success. And the first letter, R, stands for refocus. What I found is that high-caliber athletes that evaluate their current goals and then reevaluate and redirect new goals and have a refocus have more apt of having success. success. As an example, there's many athletes that before they're done playing, they start refocusing, saying, boy, you know, when I get out, I'm going to start doing financial business. There's quite a few Red Wings that I've sat down and talked to, Detroit Red Wings, that before they were done playing were getting their Series 7, their financial advising licenses, so that when they were done, they were already refocused and ready to go. So very important part. The next letter U in this acronym stands for using a network. Right? Professional athletes have a vast network of people all around them. Most of us do, actually, but athletes even more so. And so tapping into that network of people to say, boy, what is it that I want to do? What is my refocus? And who in my network might be able to help me do that? And I always qualify that, you know, when I talk about using your network, I'm not talking about using and abusing people. I'm talking about creating win-win relationships. So what I found, Jack, is that people and the athletes that tap into that network of people saying, hey, I want to be a financial advisor. Who in my industry might be able to help me? I'll give you a great example. Sean Burr, who unfortunately had an early passing not too long ago, was a Detroit Red Wing, played in Tampa, had a great career as a professional hockey player. Well, when he got out, he became a financial advisor, and one of the first things he did was start tapping into his network of people, a vast network of people, saying, hey, guess what I'm doing now? Right? And as a result, I was able to build his business much quicker as a result of that. And so, you know, refocusing, using your network, and the next letter in the acronym rules is the L, which is bar none, the most difficult for former professional athletes. But also the athletes that do this that have success. In other words, letting go. Letting go. That L stands for letting go. What I found are the pro athletes that have the ability to let go, to realize, okay, it's over, I'm done, have a better and quicker rate of success in the transition. I'll give you a great example. I had an Olympic athlete that contacted me some years ago. In fact, it was after 2008 he had reached out to me. He says, hey, I just won a medal in Beijing, right, representing the United States, and I'm not sure what I want to do at this point. And so through much dialogue, about 6 months, literally, he was going back, I don't want to, if I want to commit another 4 years or not. He literally said, no, I'm done. After about 6 months worth of communication back and forth, he let it go at that point. In contrast, I had a former Detroit Tiger that got cut. He was a pitcher that got cut in spring training. I sat down with him the week after that, went through this rules with him and talked about his own transition plan. And within a week, he was like gone. He let go. He moved on. He's like, yep, I'm done. And so it's emotional. It's a practical aspect of that letting go. The E stands for executing. What I found is that everybody that goes through a transition, especially pro athletes, realize that it's not a one and done. They have to continue to work and execute. They have to continue to refocus, to use their network, to let go over and over again as they're going through this transition process. And the final letter, S, stands for someone. What I found is pro athletes that go through a transition found someone, a mentor, so to speak, to help develop their next stage of their life. As an example, Greg Kelcer, who played quite a few years in the NBA, before he was done playing, started reaching out to people in the TV industry and spending time with them. And as a result, he had one person in particular that really helped him understand TV so that when he came out, he was ready to go. And Greg's now, in his 30th year of TV broadcasting as a result. So rules, R-U-L-E-S.
We're talking to Kurt David. If you want to learn more, www.fromglorydays.com. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to nationally known motivational speaker and a masterful storyteller, Kurt David. Kurt, let's highlight a couple of the 50 former guests on the TV show. If you would, a former NHLer, Doug Smith.
Yeah, I've had the honor of interviewing Doug actually twice for two different seasons to sit down and talk to Doug Smith about his career, but more importantly, his life after pro sports. And Doug was one of those that his journey was very good. It was a very sharp trajectory up as far as his professional career. He was in the juniors. He's out of Ottawa, Canada. He was a number two draft pick by the LA Kings. So in other words, not the number one pick, but he was a second pick in the NHL draft. Went from 19 years old in Ottawa, Canada to Los Angeles, right? So imagine that. He jokes. He said, yeah, I was 19 years old, I had a condo on the beach, money in my pocket, and a Porsche, and it was like a free fall, right? I leaned right into it and had a blast. Well, unfortunately, at 26, 27 years old, I can't remember if it was 26 or 27, Doug went headfirst into the boards during a game and went from being a professional hockey player to being instantly a quadriplegic, had nothing from his neck on down. And so Doug obviously was very despondent. You know, it changed his life. He was, you know, he even said, boy, I couldn't even kill myself if I wanted to, because I didn't have anything from the neck on down, and very depressed. And then finally his wife, who had, you know, realized how bad it was, looked at him and says, listen, you know, I can't imagine what you're going through, but understand that I love you. I have two beautiful daughters that love you. And Doug talks about that being a seminal moment for his attitude to start shifting and changing. He realized, yeah, I guess I do have something to live for at this point. And over the course of about 13 years, Doug went from being a physical being as a professional hockey player into a mental and understanding more things. And he started studying about spinal cord injuries. And what he realized was his own injury was that his spinal cord was still intact. His injury had shattered his vertebrae all the way around his spinal cord, and from the trauma, he lost all feeling from the legs or from the neck on down. But he realized over time that he started looking at, boy, okay, my spinal cord's still intact, and I have all this trauma around it. And he started learning and doing things through physical therapy and other research things that he was doing over the course of 13 years, realized that he could get his mobility back. And after 13 years, he started walking again. He has some braces, and he has some temporary paralysis on and off now, but he's now a motivational speaker and author in Canada, travels all over speaking about his story, but also about trauma and how to overcome trauma in his life.
One more, our own Eric Hipple.
Yeah, Eric Hipple was a great quarterback here in the 80s. He played for 10 years with the Detroit Lions, played with many greats like Herman Moore and Barry Sanders even. And Eric, when he was playing pro football, realized that, boy, it was just, you know, it was a great life for him. But after he got out of pro football, had some tragedy that was very much sobering and an eye-opening to his own situations. What had happened was that when Eric was done, was that his 15-year-old son had committed suicide. As a parent, I can't even imagine what that would be like to go through, but that wasn't the end of it for Eric. Eric, when he was done, after his son committed suicide, his well-established insurance business went bankrupt, and then he was locked up for 60 days in Oakland County Jail for multiple drunk driving offenses. So it was like a spiral downward from his son to his business to being locked up for multiple drunk driving. And Eric, in his own words, talks about how it was one of the best things for him to be locked up, because it caused him to sit down and realize, boy, I have depression, right? Clearly, my son had depression and realized this is something that he'd been battling with for many, many years, right? And you can read about it in his book and hear Eric talk about it. There was times that even before that, he had some situations and circumstances that he just felt like he didn't want to move forward with his life. But, you know, it's amazing, a quarterback in the NFL to have depression. You know, he and I joked. I said, yeah, sometimes playing for the Lions might have been depressing. But seriously, though, so he went through that journey after playing pro sports. But the great news is, Jack, is that he didn't leave it there, right? He turned a tragedy into a triumph and now travels literally all over the world advocating for depression, helping people with depression, talking about the steps of, you know, this is my story and this is something that you can do to help your situation. Even now, his daughter, Tara, who was in the room next to her brother when he shot himself, travels with him on and off when able and tells her side of the story as well. This is, as a young kid, is what my impression, and this is how depression impacted me in my life. And so what a powerful story, and it's just amazing how Eric's turned not just his pro football career, but his life after pro sports with the experience of his son and himself to advocate for people and help people in that manner.
The listeners are probably thinking, God, what a fascinating life this man has. Okay, you know, fascinating. TV show, etc., interviewing all these famous people. You've stated many times that maybe your greatest achievement has been being a dad. And Tammy and you, a month ago, 4th of July, had a birthday party for a 16-year-old daughter and also a birthday party for your 1-year-old son, Kurt.
Yeah. Well, Jack, I mean, I hope some of the listeners out there can empathize with this, but perhaps I'm not
the
only one.
With the same wife.
Yeah, exactly. I always qualify with the same wife,
that's
right?
That's the most amazing thing.
16-year-old, 10-year-old, and 1-year-old. And I'm sure there's some listeners out there that maybe know somebody or have the experience themselves where they have the gap like this. And we literally, you know, we have our 16-year-old daughter, our 10-year-old daughter, and we had a 1-year-old surprise, our little son that came last year. And like I tell people, God doesn't make mistakes, but I think he has a sense of humor in our case, right? So it's been an adjustment. We had no more baby stuff, and, you know, we had to start from all over and scratch. scratch again. I'll tell you what it's done for me. It's caused me to refocus and realize, boy, you know, I got to be around a lot longer, right? So I have to be around as a dad to provide and as a husband to provide. And so it's I've taken that much more serious than I did before. And one of the things that I'm very grateful for is that, I have one of the coolest jobs in the world, Jack. It really is. I mean, I get to sit down with Hall of Fame, All-Star, World Champion athletes and talk about them, about their life, not just as a high caliber athlete, but their life after pro sports and what that struggle was, but also how they recreated their success again. You know, we're starting to get a little success with the show, and so I'm very grateful. We're starting to build a great team of people that are helping this. I mean, it's not anybody that has success understands that if you see a turtle on top of a fence post, know that it didn't get there by itself, right? And so I'm that turtle, and I didn't get there by myself. There's a lot of people around me that helped me get to that point, including the athletes that I interview and the people that help support the show itself. But that said, being a dad, no question, back to your comment, being a dad, no question, is the most important job to me in the world. You know, being a TV host, speaking, I love it. I'm passionate about that. But bottom line is being a dad is one of the most important jobs to me in this world.
As you mentioned, you and Tammy have Emma, who's 16, Delaney, who's 10. And then God blessed you with a son, Owen, a year ago. And Owen's had some real challenges. A club foot, and he hasn't been able to hold food down. So here you are, this great athlete, this very successful motivational speaker. You wait so long for a son, and God blesses you with Owen. Why?
Yeah, well, first of all, any challenges that I feel we face in life are there for a purpose. I believe it's part of the journey, whether it be for the child's sake or my sake as a parent, you know, Tammy and I's sake as a parent. He was born with a club foot, which means that his foot was turned totally inward. And as an athlete, you look at that and kind of like, oh, my goodness, you know, how's this kid ever going to walk, let alone run? The great news is that when you catch it this early, there's typically a very, very good chance of you know, through surgery and the therapy, and he's having to wear braces every night, that he's, like, you won't even know that he had this when he was a baby. And so that's the good news. In fact, what's ironic is I've talked to many pro athletes, former pro athletes, that tell me, oh, yeah, I had this issue. I had to wear braces when I was a kid, or I had a club foot. And so I'm finding more and more that I don't want to say it's unusual, but more people are overcoming it. So that's the good news. You know, the eating issues. And then he had another one that we didn't talk about. It's called hemihyperplasia, where one side of his body grows faster than the other. And you know, the downside about that is that they're prone to abnormal cancer. And so we have to have screenings every 3 months for him. We're hoping to get a second opinion to really see if he does have this or not. But I think bottom line, what it all boils down to is, why are there challenges in our life? Why do we get challenges in our life? Why do things come along, whether it be in the form of a child or circumstances in our life? And to me, it's part of the journey, right? I mean, I don't want to say that I enjoy challenges, not at all, especially when it comes to this personal, you know, with a child and everything that we've, as parents, and what he's had to go through and still going through. But I think those challenges can help us learn and help us grow as people, and that's why I embrace them, so to speak, when they do happen.
Kirk David, you're a Hall of Fame man and a Hall of Fame dad. Keep up the great, great work. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.
Believe in yourself.